How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. And as always, tons of stuff to talk about in terms of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Last night was the last ever Strikeforce event. Strikeforce is dead. The winners last night likely heading to UFC. The losers, well, most of them probably going to be cut. Some of them, however, will likely end up still going to UFC despite losses. We'll talk about who and why, plus all of the results of the final Strikeforce of all time, some history of the promotion, and a lot more that's coming up on this program. Plus, this afternoon, it is the TNA Genesis pay-per-view, one of four live pay-per-views this year. That's right. TNA has axed 8 pay-per-views. 8! So we're going to be talking about why that happened, what the live pay-per-views are going to be, what they're going to be doing in terms of taped shows. Plus, we're going to run down the lineup of the TNA Genesis pay-per-view, give you all of the matches on the card, our predictions for the show. Always fun to look back on those later on in the evening. And of course, later on tonight, Dave Meltzer and I will be back with a brand new Wrestling Observer Radio, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, running down that show. On this show here, also a bunch of news, including the return of The Rock to WWE. How did his segment do on Raw Monday night? He, of course, returned to SmackDown as well. SmackDown, of course, was the scene of a world championship title change. Alberto Del Rio beat The Big Show to win the world heavyweight title. Why did this happen on SmackDown out of nowhere? We'll tell you what the deal is with Alberto Del Rio, why he won the title, what the WWE's plans are for Alberto Del Rio, why it took place when it did, and, of course, how all of this plays into the Royal Rumble, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. Plus, of course, Impact, Raw, SmackDown, UFC, so much stuff to talk about today, and we are going to kick it off right after the break. So, back in just a moment. Stay by that dial. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and if you've got a smartphone, check out the TuneIn Radio app. Check in Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer Live on the TuneIn Radio app, and you can listen to this show every Sunday live, as well as archives of this program as well. So if the show happens to be preempted by some sort of sporting event on Sirius or your local affiliate, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com or the TuneIn Radio app and never miss an episode of Wrestling Observer Live. We have so much stuff to talk about here today. Let us kick it off with the demise of Strikeforce. Mike, to me, the defining moment of last night's show was a brief interview with the man behind Strikeforce, the founder of the promotion, a man who has been involved in the MMA business since 1985, since I was 10 years old. Scott Coker has been in and around mixed martial arts. He built Strikeforce to what it became before it was sold to Zuffa. This was its final show ever, his final Strikeforce event, and he finished the show with a plug for Showtime programming. A company man at the very end, Scott Coker. I was really sad for him, but I really wasn't surprised, actually, by the sign-off there. Mike, what did you think of the final ever Strikeforce event?
I found it kind of funny that they actually had it on free preview weekend. That was a little bit of a surprise. I don't know exactly how that happened, but I guess if you're Showtime and you're losing it, why not just go ahead and give it away for the last one? And I don't think Scott Coker will ever get enough credit in being able to functionally deal with the Japanese, which he did for so many years and was the conduit or the point man, whatever it was, for K-1 when they would come to Las Vegas and they trotted out Bob Sapp and they had ESPN coverage of the Strikeforce shows and old K-1 shows. He does actually deserve a lot of credit for that, and he was the one guy that Dana White never would really talk bad about until he got into direct competition with him, and then, of course, things changed a little bit, and Dana healed up on him. But you know, unfortunately, the show, it was, as you predicted, as many predicted, there were going to be people pulling out of this show. I actually didn't think that was going to happen at first, because I figured, okay, with the UFC buying them and everything, guys would probably want to showcase themselves or fight on this show. That didn't happen. What you thought was going to happen did, and that's, you know, fights pulled out. And you know, there was some exciting moments. Daniel Cormier, obviously, you know, Daniel Cormier and Josh Barnett, they may not be the answer to Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez, but they do at least offer some intriguing possibilities. Barnett, at least possibly, and him for a different reason. Cormier looks to definitely be the case, and he's probably going to make a very long night of it for Frank Mir coming up in April. And then said that sets up the rest of his year. So, you know, it's unfortunate for a lot of fighters out there who obviously, you know, won't get a chance to get in the UFC. And it's another place where fighters can't go and be seen on Showtime. So it's a little disappointing that way. But with that said, with what Strikeforce was turning into, ultimately, it really is better off this way.
Before we get into the results here, they had a poll on the show. What is your number one memory of Strikeforce? What defines Strikeforce for you? And there were a number of options. The fall of Fedor, for example. The rise of Ronda Rousey. The cyborg fight with Gina Carano. Mike, what is the defining... When you think of Strikeforce, what is its defining moment?
For me, it's right. Yeah, it's like Elite XC. For me, it's probably Rousey in the same way that it was Carano. Although, you know, Shamrock and Kung Lee was cool for me, because being a fan of MMA for, you know, pretty much since its inception, Frank Shamrock has, you know, always stood out, and he was the one guy you knew was never getting back into UFC. So his fights against like Gracie, that was. Again, not super memorable or anything. It was a quick knockout, but it just, for some reason, it felt like it meant something. And Kung Lee as well, because I watched him on those Scott Coker K-1 shows. When K-1 would come over or K-1 would have a show, they would always have Kung Lee do the sand show boxing demonstration, basically, where he just, you know, got a chance to showcase his skills. And I don't know, for some reason, those actually will kind of hold a place, just because, again, it was something that was very, you know, again, very Strikeforce. I don't know, you know, a better way to put it. And, you know, it was things you were looking forward to. It's like the women's division and Gina Carano obviously leading, or not, sorry, not Gina Carano, Ronda Rousey leading the charge of that. You know, it never looked like the UFC would ever have women in there, from what Dana White would always say and complaining about divisions and the whole nine yards. And, you know, Strikeforce gave them the opportunity, just like Elite XC did, to have women's fights. You know, I don't think anybody should ever mind having a one-off women's fight the same way they would do in boxing with Christy Martin or Layla Ali or whoever it is. You know, it's okay to have a showcase, and they were able to do that. So with how everything turned out and how she was able to change Dana White's mind and be showcased on Strikeforce, the legacy of the promotion really... You know, with the way Fedor is looked at, you know, at least right now, it's got to be about Ronda Rousey.
To me, the two things that define Strikeforce more than anything else, in the end, looking back historically, number one is the fall of Fedor. I mean, if you watched Pride from the very beginning, which I did, you saw the rise of Fedor, and Fedor was the unstoppable machine. Fedor was the man who could not be beat. And the day that he was triangled, it's kind of actually a triangle armbar, but he tapped. I mean, that's something that I'll never forget. And that was the beginning of the end for Fedor Emelianenko, who is now retired. And Strikeforce was the promotion that this all occurred in. And just everything about it. I mean, the whole story of his management and how difficult they were, and the money that had been offered to bring him into UFC, and how that whole thing fell apart, and trying so hard to create a value behind him and make as much money as possible on this guy. And they took a gigantic gamble, and they lost big. They lost everything. And it was such a... something I'll never forget, the loss of Fedor Emelianenko, and I think that's perhaps the most defining Strikeforce single moment. I think as a the division, I guess. I don't even know the way to describe it, but the legacy, one of the great legacies of Strikeforce, is in fact women fighting in mixed martial arts on a grand stage. I remember when I remember before I had seen my first ever women's fight in Strikeforce, I was just, I wasn't like against it, but I didn't think I would want to watch it because my mindset was always, why would I want to watch two women beating the hell out of each other? Why would I want to do this? I was never even like a, I was never even a fight fan that really wanted to see like two dudes beat the hell out of each other. I mean, I remember back the Forrest Griffin-Stephen Bonner fight that everybody thought was just like the greatest fight of all time. I mean, I would never sit here and tell you it wasn't a great fight. It was an amazing fight. But was it my favorite fight of all time or even top 10? No. Because I was always about the technique behind fighting. Having a great technical fight. And usually it was jiu-jitsu, obviously. But I always enjoyed the technical aspects of a fight and even guys that... The guys who were great at stand-up fighting in the sense that they were great stand-up fighters who avoided getting hit. I love watching Anderson Silva fight on his feet. He destroys men and he never gets hit. I think there's a great talent in that, and that's what I liked in my fighting. And thus, the idea of men like beating on each other, beating each other up, was never the draw of mixed martial arts to me. So the idea of women doing it, I was like, man, do I really want to see this? But I saw my first ever women's fight, and I mean, the moment that bell rang, it wasn't two women fighting. It was two athletes fighting. And from there, I never looked back, and I can remember being there for Chris Cyborg and Gina Carano. I was there in the building live for that fight, and that was like, I don't say it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen, but since I am the king of hyperbole, that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. That was an amazing, the reaction to Gina and Cyborg and the crowd, 4 minutes and 59 seconds. I'll never forget that fight. And those are the two things that when I look back in 30 years and people ask me about Strikeforce, I'm going to remember Cyborg versus Carano and the reaction in the building, and I'm going to remember the doom of Fedor Emelianenko. We're going to talk more about this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out, Sirius XM 794, as well as on the TuneIn Radio app for your smartphone. Download the TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline USA. You listen to the show live or archived episodes of the program are available as well. So check it out, the TuneIn Radio app. I get nothing for this plug except the knowledge that you, the listener, will have a chance to listen to the show if perhaps it gets preempted for some sort of sporting event here in January heading into the Super Bowl. Mike, the final Strikeforce show was last night, and I talked briefly, actually, not so briefly, about my the two defining moments and two things that define Strikeforce the most for me. Any comment on those, and then we'll move into the actual results of the show.
Yeah, you know, mentally, I actually did, for some reason, put Carano and Cyborg back into Elite XC, technically, those days. And with that said, I mean, yeah, that was an amazing fight, and obviously, with what we know about Cyborg, especially in hindsight, you know, Gina Carano... there was all that talk, you know, on ESPN, and when she would be on, of, you know, is she just more, you know, the style than substance? And that fight, especially in hindsight, proves how much substance she had. And there was, I mean, there were a lot of, you know, good things, and if not good things, at least wacky things that came out of Strikeforce with, you know, Jake Shields upsetting the apple cart with Henderson, and King Mo kind of came into his own and became a character. There were brawls with Mayhem Miller and the Gracies, and Diaz and the Nunes family almost got into a brawl, and just all that stuff, you know, too, where, you know, it seems like it forever ago it started, and it's only been a couple of years that Strikeforce was around, but yeah, it's not like it didn't leave its a mark and a legacy. And remember how it started too, with, like, you know, you had Tank Abbott and Paul Bontello, so it was still remnants from those old Pride days, like you had talked about too, which again, still with you know, there's so many people that Dana White has got grudges with that you knew you'd never see in the UFC. You at least got to see him there.
Well, it's kind of interesting watching the show on Saturday night. Here we are. It is the final ever Strikeforce event. And what is our main event? Nate Marquardt and Tarek Saffiedine for the welterweight title. A match that for the first three rounds, my God, I was nearly put to sleep. I just couldn't believe I was watching the end of Strikeforce with this fight. And it did pick up a little bit in the second and the third round. And I guess, maybe fittingly, the end of Strikeforce was a big upset. Saffiedine takes the welterweight title, spoils Nate Marquardt's attempt to jump to UFC and get a championship match with Georges St. Pierre. I presume Marquardt is still going to UFC. No guarantee. The idea was the winners of this show would be going to UFC and the losers would likely not, at least at the moment. And Tarek Saffiedine won himself a championship and a job with his performance. And Nate Marquardt, I guess we shall see. He obviously had his problems with Dana White and UFC after a drug test failure. But the belief was, well, he'll be back after this show here, after he successfully defends his title. He did not. So, very interesting main event, very interesting finish. Your thoughts on the main event last night?
Yeah, just a real surprise, and you know, the immediately what I thought of, too, because I thought, okay, Marquardt's going to go in, but it did make me think that he, you know, obviously there was, you know, not tons and tons of leverage, and everybody would want to be in the UFC, but I'm not sure who stands as the second biggest fight promotion going now, or what may pop up, but the Marquardt situation, and Barnett, you know, in a way, too, raises a case of what if the UFC doesn't want you? Then what are your options and what do you do? Because Marquardt, obviously, Dana White's venom at him after the PED failure that he had, you know, what does he do now with losing to Saffiedine? And, you know, on the flip side of that, it's, you know, good. Obviously, Saffiedine gets to walk into UFC and at least have the hook on him that, you know, he was the last Strikeforce 170-pound champion. But with that said, it'll be interesting, you know, with so many guys, there's going to be a lot of guys who, you know, there's so many guys at 155 pounds that are taking up spots in the UFC and so many guys in so many different weight divisions where, you know, a guy like Saffiedine who, you know, not like Hector Lombard or somebody like that, or that you think is going to walk in and at least, you know, look to make somewhat of an impact right away in the UFC. Yeah, you know, I wonder how many chances the guys like a Saffiedine are going to get to walk in. Maybe they get one fight. Maybe they don't even get two if they don't look good, and there goes their chance. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a very, you know, not an exciting main event on paper to me. And yeah, obviously the upset, but. Yeah, a very average way to end Strikeforce's days.
I remember when they announced that this show was going to take place here on January 11th, and it was going to be a massive mega event. And here we are, it's the day after, and looking up and down the main card, yeah, we had several guys looking very impressive, but what a card. I mean, just one lopsided fight after another. Daniel Cormier, for example, faced Deion Staring, who was a minus, I guess actually Cormier was minus 2,000, which means if you...
minus a zillion.
Yes, you could have, if you put $100 on Deion and he won, you would have received $2,000 in return. And that obviously didn't happen, although Deion did make it into the second round. But Daniel Cormier, Josh Barnett, Gegard Mousasi, and Jacare Souza all looked very impressive until you realize that probably with the exception of Jacare Souza, as Ed Herman is a tough guy. I mean, this was one expectation fulfilled after another, at least until the main event for a lot of people. And Josh Barnett, who knows? Cormier is obviously going to UFC, and he has challenged Frank Mir for the April 20th Fox show, which is almost certain to end up booked on that show. Mike Kyle losing to Gegard Mousasi is probably heading over to light heavyweight. And Jacare Souza looked great. He beat Ed Herman. He looked awesome. And he's certainly moving to UFC as well. And we shall see about the War Master Josh Barnett. Obviously, he destroyed Nandor Gelmino, I believe was his name. And, you know, one-sided, lopsided victory. He made sure to make a name for himself afterwards in terms of cutting a promo. Basically, I don't know if he was targeting certain people that were supposed to have fought on the show and didn't, but he noted that he had had the flu forever and had virtually no time to train. But by God, he is a fighter and he is a man, and he came out here and he fought this fight with no training. Granted, it was Nandor Gelmino, not exactly the most impressive opponent, but he had a point he was trying to make, and he made it well. So we will see what the future is for Josh Barnett.
Well, and you should think he should beat a guy like Nandor Gelmino in under 2 minutes with Barnett's experience, and he just about did that in 2 minutes and 11 seconds, so at least he went out there and did what he had to do, and then afterwards, cutting the promo, you know, the standard stuff from Josh Barnett. He's really good at a lot of different things, you know, as far as his pro wrestling skills, though, and could be somebody that could still, even right now, make an impact on the Japanese pro wrestling scene if there was the availability to do so. But if I'm UFC, I put any grudges to the side. Obviously, he's got to go in front of a commission or at least get tested, and he knows this, and I don't think there's going to be a third strike for Josh Barnett. At least I would hope that's not the case, because, again, I can't see him at this point beating Cain Velasquez or beating Junior Dos Santos, but he can be an entertaining guy that you can make some money off of, and he is a pro. He does know how to conduct himself, how to carry himself, you know, how to put on, you know, he can put on pretty good fights when he wants to, although he's a big guy and he uses his wrestling to smother you. He still knows how to put on a good fight against an opponent when it comes time to. So hopefully all of those hard feelings are put to the side, because with the lack of impact they have in that heavyweight division, just having a couple extra bodies who are, you know, certainly more than serviceable, like a Josh Barnett, would be, you know, in the UFC's best interest.
What were your thoughts on Daniel Cormier last night? I was not impressed. I mean, obviously, he was never in any danger whatsoever. However, it's Deion Starring, and I predicted, like, okay, if Starring lasts a minute, good for him. He made it two rounds. And I don't know. I mean, Cormier destroyed him and everything, but I just remember watching him going, okay, there's arms everywhere, there's necks everywhere, the dude's not doing anything. Even like some of the takedowns, I don't want to say he struggled with them, but I don't know. I just expected a significantly more one-sided manhandling than I got. And it took a long time for him to finish this guy. I didn't see finishing power from Daniel Cormier. I just saw grind out a decision. And that's great and all. I mean, he won. But and I expect him to grind out a win over Frank Mir. But it wasn't like when this fight was over, I was like, as a fan, salivating to see Daniel Cormier in the heavyweight division in UFC. I don't know.
No, and it left open the hole that, you know, because he didn't finish. I mean, because that first round could have been scored 10-7. I mean, he beat Deion Starring so bad. You know, it most certainly wasn't. But you could have, in the fact that he couldn't finish him there. It's like you can't give. Frank Mir is really getting great. You know, obviously Cormier's wrestling is insane. But you cannot give Frank Mir even a little bit of a hole or a little bit of breathing room because of his, you know, wily veteran status. He can catch Daniel Cormier, and then that wouldn't be good. So, again, maybe Cormier was a little bit slowed for whatever reason. Maybe that's the case that comes out. But, yeah, I mean, he should have actually finished Starring in the first round, and it's disappointing that he didn't.
All right, we're going to head to a break. We're going to talk a little bit more about this show when we come back, but quite frankly, this was hardly the most exciting finale to a promotion that we've ever seen. So we got a lot of other news to get into. So back in just a moment with more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We've been talking the demise of the Strikeforce promotion. And, Mike, any final thoughts on the final show of Strikeforce before we move on with what has been a very busy news week?
Yeah, you know, just a little bit disappointing that Mauro Ranallo's got some family issues and couldn't be at the show. And I forget the guy from Access who filled in, who, you know, did a fine job there. But it's, Mauro's got a good career going on when it comes to Showtime Boxing, and he and Al Bernstein have been a good team, so don't worry about him too much. But it's too bad that there's a possibility of not being able to hear Pat Miletich or Frank Shamrock again on commentary. And you know, it's just disappointing that it has got to end this way, and there couldn't be two viable groups. But with that said, again, with the way it has gone, you know, it's better to have a couple memories, you know, good memories and burnout than hang on for way too long and have a bastardized name like K1 does now.
Showtime has not committed anything, but they have expressed interest in more MMA after the Strikeforce deal ends. I don't know who or what. Obviously, Invicta is trying to get a television deal. It's an all-women's promotion, Strikeforce and Showtime. Showtime had an issue with the women in the sense that they weren't... I mean, they were behind it, obviously. They were behind Ronda Rousey, but... I mean, they didn't like to have two women's fights on the same show. Obviously, there was the...
Which bit him in the ass.
Yeah, bit him in the ass in the end. But the point is, with the way they treated the women, I just don't see them bringing in an all-women's promotion. Maybe they'll broadcast an event or two, but the announcers on the... on the Strikeforce shows were hired by Showtime. So I do think that you're going to see further MMA events on Showtime. I doubt they'll just sign an exclusive deal with the promotion and try and create a number two. I think that they'll just, they'll probably work with a couple of different regional groups and air events and bring back Shamrock, Ranallo. And they'll bring the crew back, I think, is the reality of the situation. And who knows, Miletich could end up going to UFC. I'm not sure. Frank Shamrock he's on Showtime or he's nowhere, I think. I don't see him going to UFC. I don't think Dana has a problem with Mauro Ranallo. I don't necessarily know if he's a huge fan of Ranallo. I know that at some points he has indicated that he's not the biggest fan. I know a lot of people, I gotta say this about Mauro Ranallo. The very first time, and Mauro Ranallo would tell you this because we discussed it when he was on my show once, the very first time I ever heard Mauro Ranallo, I was not a fan at all. I buried him in the newsletter. I just could not handle Mauro Ranallo. But after a couple of shows, he really started to grow on me. And I know that even today, there are a lot of people that don't like Mauro Ranallo. They don't like his announcing style. But I don't know. Mauro Ranallo not on that show last night was like there was a gaping hole in the Strikeforce event, and I really thought that he was missing from the broadcast, something fierce, and that's just the reality of the situation. Don't really have to worry about that anymore with Showtime no more, but hopefully Mauro Ranallo continues to get work, because I do think he's an excellent announcer, excellent broadcaster. He's a guy that, I don't know, I like to see guys that really care. And I'm not saying that anyone in particular didn't care on this show, but I mean, Mauro Ranallo really cares. You can tell he really cares. And I like to see that exuberance. And I like to see people. That's one of the things about sometimes in WWE when you get a new announcer, like Booker T. I remember when Booker T was an announcer on SmackDown. And man, every week I just heard people bury Booker T. And to me, it was like, listen, You got a bunch of announcers. Just give me an announcer that's going to call the action. Give me an announcer that's going to do color. And if you've got a third announcer that's just going to be a fan, and he's just going to be so excited about everything, great! And that was Booker T. And I'm not, I hate to compare Mauro Ranallo to Booker T because it's two completely different things, but I really did miss his exuberance here on this show. And the Strikeforce event's just not the same without Mauro.
You know, that's one thing Strikeforce also gave us, as we cannot forget, too, coming off of the Elite XC years. We did have Gus Johnson for a little bit on Strikeforce telecast, which, You know, I was far more entertained by Gus Johnson than some others. I'm not going to say he was good, but I was entertained much of the time. But, you know, and there's one thing Showtime could do, too, with something like Invicta. And I know Invicta tried to do their pay-per-view last week on the Internet. It was like $9.95. They had a some sort of screw-up where they let everybody have it for free, and they've gone on to stream it on their site since, where, you know, Showtime could, in theory, try out, because of their pay-per-view arm, just kind of stand in the shadows, not really put the Showtime name on it, and try a $14.95 all-women's pay-per-view to see if it gets any, you know, legs whatsoever. It doesn't necessarily have to air on Showtime. So if they're willing to use their resources to continue, you know, backing MMA in all of its forms, and the way they have with boxing, because Showtime really is taken over from HBO, as far as being the go-to network to watch boxing, if they're willing to at least continue to support MMA, you know, going forward, it may not be a banner year next year or anything like that, but it still would be an improvement.
Now, what about Heidi Andral? Would you keep her?
Yes. You know why I would keep her? I would have her
Please
be
explain.
Just the exclusive interviewer of Ronda Rousey.
Actually, if I ever Dana White and I had the money UFC has, I would in fact hire her just for that. Her
and
personal interviewer.
Have Judo Jean LaBelle there, and really, I would just—you can't let Andral in on this. You'd almost go back, and I know MMA fans hate this, but damn it, go back to old pro wrestling times. Have Judo Jean LaBelle standing there with the stopwatch timing the interview, saying the interview is going to be over, and messing with Heidi Andral, maybe putting like, you know, a pink shirt over her head, and then, you know, clicks the stopwatch, and we're done with these stupid questions, and Ronda just glares at her and walks away. It's probably too pro wrestling like, but. Yeah, that would be the only way I would keep Heidi Andral.
All right, it is TNA Genesis this afternoon. It's been a hell of a week for TNA. One of the most important, interesting things about tonight, the Genesis show, is the crowd. The size of the crowd and the crowd reactions. TNA pay-per-views, sometimes they are helped, sometimes they are hurt by the reaction of the crowd in attendance at the Impact Zone. And Saturday night at the Impact Zone, they taped two pay-per-views. Here's what's going on. TNA is no longer doing 12 live Sunday pay-per-view events per year. They are going to be doing 4. They have cut from 12 to 4. The rest of the time, on the non-live pay-per-view months, they are going to be airing taped shows, which will air, I believe, on Friday nights with a $9.95 price tag. They taped two shows this weekend, an All X Division show and a Joker's Wild show, which was a tag team tournament where names were drawn at random. They had a tag team tournament that led to a gauntlet match, which ended up with one guy winning and being crowned the winner of the Joker's Wild tournament. What that leads to, I have absolutely no idea, but they did it. I was told that the Joker's Wild show was good, and the X Division show was probably a must buy if you're a fan of TNA. $9.95, $14.95, whatever the price is going to be. I was told get the X Division show, and if you're a TNA fan, you'll probably enjoy the Joker's Wild show as well. Regardless, that is the switch in pay per view plans, and because they taped two shows yesterday at the Impact Zone, how many of those people are going to show up again tonight for Genesis? If they show up, are they going to be burned out? Will they be into the storylines and the matches? I guess we shall find out. Mike, what are you expecting?
The other thing that's the kick in the crotch about this pay-per-view is, look how they've promoted it now. I know you can heckle both WWE and TNA, you know, badly for how they tend to promote their pay-per-views. But, you know, this was only, they only kind of made a big deal out of this in the last couple of days as far as, like, you know, releasing it to multi-channel news and stuff like that. The Observer and the Figure Four have had it for, you know, a while that they were going to cut back. I'm surprised they went to 4 and went to quarterly ones instead of 6. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It just really surprised me that they decided to go that route. And then go with the idea that you're going to air, you know, first run on Fridays. It, you know, for $14.95, you know, the price I like. I don't know if I like the day. I still would rather go Sunday, although I guess it's tough to fit that as far as, do you want it coming after UFC pay-per-views on Saturday and dealing with WWE on picking weeks. But, again, a little bit of a surprise there. But if you are only going to have four full-priced, and then obviously the anniversary show is going to be higher, $10 higher than the others, why would you not want to really pour your resources and make everybody know that these are going to be special? And they did a very, very bad job, you know, leading up to this Genesis pay-per-view. And again, to make the decision to go to only four is fine in theory if you make them big deals, and they certainly have not made this a big deal.
All right, everybody, you ready for some fun? I'm going to try and do some math.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Abacus.
I estimate that TNA makes about $14 per buy on pay-per-view due to the pay-per-view split with the cable companies. $13, $14. I estimate that to run a pay-per-view, it probably costs them between $150,000 and $200,000. I could be wrong with those numbers. That is my... When I look at how much it costs to run an Impact Live and pay the talent and everything like that, I actually could be low. But let's just say it costs about $200,000, okay? So I am estimating your average show that does about 8,000 buys, I am estimating that show loses about $100,000. And over the course of a year, we're talking a loss to TNA of $1 million to run a pay-per-view live every month. Now, granted, some of these shows like Lockdown and Bound for Glory do significantly better than 8,000 buys. Of late, they've been doing some shows with, I don't know, 11,000 buys with Jeff Hardy headlining. So let's just say that, you know, give or take, about $1 million that they lose per year. So if they can cut down to four pay-per-views a year, they'll be losing significantly less money. And when you're talking about this deal they did yesterday where they taped two shows on one day, you've cut your costs from, say, $200,000 to $100,000. Those are your costs per show. And it's likely, I would say, that they're probably going to lose a lot of money on those taped pay-per-views, but they may not. I mean, if a show gets good word of mouth and they get the word out on the internet, a lot of people buy those shows at $9.95, $14.95. It's a lot cheaper to run a taped pay-per-view than a live pay-per-view. Possibility, maybe those shows will break even or make a little bit of money. So my expectation is that TNA is going to come out in a little bit better financial shape, at least in the sense that they're not going to lose so much money every year on pay-per-view by making this switch. I know that the Dixie many times has claimed, we're not losing money on pay-per-view. We're not losing money on pay-per-view. Well, if you're not losing money on pay-per-view, why would you cut from 12 to 4? So obviously they've got to be losing some money on pay-per-view. Otherwise, it makes no sense to cut. So I think that this is a good move in the sense that financially, they're not going to be bleeding quite so much money on this pay-per-view deal, but you're also looking at a number two wrestling company that has admitted, we can only run four shows a year. That's what makes sense to us financially, and I don't know if that's a good thing. Maybe it doesn't matter. Mike, I'm going to get your thoughts on this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, we're talking the pay-per-view changes coming to TNA, and what are your thoughts on switching to four pay-per-views a year? Does this matter, or is this a big deal that your number two company has made this decision?
Oh, I think it's a big deal. You know, the big thing that they put out and want to put out there to the media was, well, you know, the industry is changing, and, you know, that's not true. If the industry was changing that much, you'd be putting... You know, you'd be hyping your shows on your iPay-per-views and doing it that way so you'd be able to take in and keep all of that money. But instead, they're having these Friday, again, these lesser-priced Friday pay-per-views that are already put in the can and people will know the results of. I just think it's a misstep to cut to four. If that's what they got to do, that's what they got to do, and it's better that way. But the bottom line is, you know, UFC 148, for anything anybody says about the UFC and their slacking numbers and things like that, let's just say, use the example of the Silva-Sonnen fight. 1.8 million people watched the FX preview, you know, the preliminaries and the lead-in. Basically, half of those people, 925,000 people, bought the pay-per-view, 50%. And you're talking about numbers with TNA. It's not going to matter if they only have four, if they continue to keep the same percentage. If they have a million people watching every week, they cannot get more than 25,000 to order. That's no matter what happens, if they're not going to pay the $45 or $55 for the TNA show and they cannot convert, you know, their viewers into paying, which it doesn't seem like they'll ever be able to do, then really all of this just ends up being moot anyway.
We're going to head to a break, everybody. When we come back, we're going to preview the TNA Genesis pay-per-view. We got tons of WWE news as well, including the return of The Rock to WWE, both Raw and SmackDown this week. Plus, we have a new world heavyweight champion in Alberto Del Rio. All of that's coming up after our hourly break. Stick around, everybody. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined as we are every week, Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet, available on the TuneIn Radio app for your smartphone as well. That's the TuneIn Radio app. Free on many smartphones, less than $5 on a lot of others. You download the app and you can check out Wrestling Observer Live programming on Sports Byline USA, all of the other great programming as well, archives of Observer Live, the whole nine yards. And Mike, I'd just like to mention, since we were talking about it in hour one, the changes to the TNA pay-per-view schedule. Dixie Carter noted that the pay-per-view landscape has changed, which is funny, because, in fact, it has changed in the sense that 2012, for both UFC and WWE, was up on pay-per-view from 2011. So both major companies have done better on pay-per-view last year than the year prior. Seems like the landscape should be fine for pay-per-view. Apparently, it's not.
Well, and the thing is, too, what they should be saying at the same time as they're going to have these pre-taped Friday shows is, hey, you can also watch them over at TNA, you know, TNAWrestling.com. That's what they should be doing, so they can actually take in all of that money and keep all of that money. And again, if they can't do that, they need to figure out a way to get those pay-per-views on there so they can keep all of that money, because I don't think those are going to do very well. I mean, I really, really don't. Not, a, you know, especially not on the first night it's on. It may do decently throughout the month, but I don't have high expectations for those, because you're already taking pay-per-views that people don't think are all that important and making them basically even less important. So unless they pull something, you know, magical out of these pay-per-views, I doubt word of mouth is going to catch on and that they're going to do very well.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking the TNA Genesis pay-per-view. We're going to preview all of the matches on the show, plus lots of WWE news to get into later on in the program. Check it out. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. It is time to talk the TNA Turning Point. No, I'm sorry, Genesis pay-per-view. You know, I can never get these pay-per-views straight. It's been how many years for TNA? 10 years now? And I can still never get these pay-per-views straight. I attribute that to poor branding.
The poor branding, the fact that, again, would you even known there was a pay-per-view this week if you know, because, again, I forgot about it. Until I watched Impact, I completely forgot that they had one, because 2 weeks ago they were, you know, pretty much invisible as far as promoting it and you know, getting their point across about it. It's again, all of these things together, as we talk about this pay-per-view and how it was built up and the matches on it. Again, this is the one that's $44.95. This is the one that they want you to pay for. This is really the one they want you to pay for. And you see how they treated it. And again, I'm not, you know, trying to sound so negative and boo-hoo and fatalistic when it comes to TNA or anything like that, but Jesus Christ, look how you promoted this thing. And again, this is the one you want. This is one of the four you want people to pay for. This is one of your four big ones. You know, whatever the first match is, again, we can go through the whole thing here. Again, they want you to pay for this.
Do you know who graces the cover of this TNA Genesis poster?
That would be the suspended but marrying type of Bully Ray.
Bully suspended without pay Ray. That's, I think it should be his new gimmick.
You know, I think King Kong Bundy kind of had that one with Fritz Von Erich or something like that, that he was like blackballed and he was like, you know, a blackballed labor guy or something. That would be fine. That, you know, I'm fine with that with Bully Ray. As long as he keeps Hulk Hogan making angry dad Hulkster faces with steam coming out of his ears leaving the ring, I guess I can live with it.
I got to talk about Impact before we get into this pay-per-view card. First off, Austin Aries and Bobby Roode are fabulous men.
Yeah.
That's
the one thing about this show, too, tonight. Yeah, they were so good on Thursday. They somehow out-Kazarian and Daniel Kazarian and Daniels.
I thought that was fantastic. And I also loved, I can't even explain really why, but the final segment where Bully proposed to Brooke Hogan with an irate, angry father Hulk Hogan in the background, and completely at random, Sting in full face paint, observing these shenanigans. And then after proposing and getting a yes and agreeing to get married on Impact next week, they hugged and Bully Ray looked into the camera and told us, the viewing audience, it's hitting the fan next week. And God, do I hope it hits the fan. I do not want a swerve. I do not want Bully Ray to end up a babyface and for Sting, for example, to turn on Brooke. I don't want that. They basically told me what's going to happen, and it pleases me. So go along with this. I beg of you.
See, I was kind of hoping that we'd get a replay of Butcher Vachon's wedding or something like that, but you know, I worked because it was a bunch of old pros, and it was it was even how they said things. Like, even like Bully Ray just saying, you know, I want to get married. I wanted to be in front of all of these people at the Impact Zone. I just thought the whole thing was a goofy, bad comedy in a lot of ways, yes. But they were so good in doing it that I'm completely fine with seeing where that goes.
What do you think is going to happen at the wedding?
I'm sure there'll be some aces and eights or something. I have no idea. I don't even want to speculate on what it could be, as long as, again, Hulk Hogan's face, and frankly, I don't want to see Hulk Hogan fending off aces and eights or being involved in any of that stuff. This is, frankly, the version of Hulk Hogan I am completely fine with having at this point. Because, again, him all tensed up with the fists balled up and having an angry face and just looking so dejected and pissed off, walking back, and Sting kind of making, you know, you can wear a mask or wear face paint and be completely, you know, descriptive with your facial expressions. And Sting was great with that. And Bully Ray has been very good over the last couple of years. I just think all of this together, this is exactly what I want out of Hulk Hogan.
I didn't like that the show went off the air with a big plug for next week's free show and not the pay-per-view today.
$44.95. There's one match on here worth it.
Yeah.
One.
Which match is that?
Well, and again, this is no insult to anybody else, but Aries, Hardy, and Roode, Roode and Aries were so good, and how they worked against Jeff Hardy last time around and how they worked against each other with that match. With Dave, you know, they were trying to out-heal each other, and Hebner had enough, and they both turned on him at the same time. They are very good with each other, and with Jeff Hardy, you know, this, you know, it won't be as spectacular as Devitt, Loki, and Kota Ibushi, but this is the kind of three-way that I usually like, with three guys who, again, all a little bit different in their own ways, but all seem to work well together in an elimination match. I think this is probably going to be the best thing on the show. And again, as far as what they pushed and how it's been presented, this is the thing that I want to separate from my money from.
Yeah, I expect that to be a good match. I'm also I ask because I'm also looking forward actually to Chris Daniels and James Storm. I think that's going to be really good. And I'm intrigued by Joe Park and D-Von after Joe Park has gone to wrestling school. So there are a couple of things. Even Doc versus Sting, I think, is going to be interesting. But anyway, let's run down the card. It is Austin Aries, Jeff Hardy, Bobby Roode in a. Did you know it was an elimination match for the title?
Well, yes, just because I read that. It's not because I remember that from Impact, unfortunately.
I see. I was unaware until I read that right now. You may have actually stated that when you were talking a moment ago, but I was distracted by a car alarm, which I was concerned was my car. But it appears everything's okay. These things happen here in the mean streets of Bothell, Washington. Anyway, Aries, Hardy, and Roode, yes, should be a very good match. And I don't expect, especially after the last few pay-per-views have done like 11,000 buys, I don't expect this one to, I don't expect them to take the title off Jeff Hardy yet.
No, I don't think so either. And again, I don't know if they'll continue on with this dynamic with Aries and Roode or not, but I'd be completely happy if they did. And Hardy needs somebody else. I don't know who it's going to be, but he needs somebody else to work with anyway. So, yeah, I'd actually be okay with that.
Now, Hardy could lose if he is not re-signed. Although I think with TNA producing some albums, him as champion, I think there's a pretty good chance he is re-signing if he is not already.
Wait, would that stop TNA from, I mean, really, do you think that would stop them?
Well, no.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks, well, of course they'd take the title off him if he didn't re-sign, but then there's all of this evidence that they wouldn't.
There's years of professional wrestling history to back that up, too.
Indeed. We've also got Chris Daniels and James Storm. Nothing on the line. Just a match. They're feuding. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, it is. And again, I like both of those guys. And James Storm's had, you know, been hurt a lot over the last couple of years, with, you know, especially last year with how he was booked in TNA. And they didn't make any improvements when they came back with him either. But Christopher Daniels has been great. And I hope, you know, this is one where I don't mind it continuing on because I like to see it build up to something bigger. If they're not going to have Kazarian and Daniels as in the hunt for the tag team title. So I'll say Daniels gets the win with Kazarian's interference, and that leads to Storm getting a partner and this continuing on.
Doc versus Sting. Of course, I don't know if I can call him Mike Knox. He unmasked as Mike Knox, but then, you know, he, I don't know. He was that big man, I believe they called him. The big guy. The only person that called him Knox was Sting, who I don't think was supposed to. They kept referring to him as the big man. And so he lost to Sting, clean in the middle, on Impact, which is leading to Sting versus Doc. And I guess we'll see if this leads to a storyline. We got to head to a break. I'll get Mike's thoughts on this after we return, and I'm going to go make sure my car is still here. So back in a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 40 minutes or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. As we are every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet. Whew. WrestlingObserver.com. If you're wondering, I'm in fact slightly out of breath, running up and down the stairs, trying to find out if my car had been stolen, as the, I thought the alarm went off during the last segment. Mike, I went out there, and in fact, was not my car. I believe it was the neighbor's. And it's been cold here. I don't know if unseasonably cold would be the correct term, but it's been very cold for Seattle of late. And my car is a block of ice. And I think what happened was our neighbor had a friend over, and the friend went to get into their car, but all of the doors are like frozen shut. And so they had to give the car a good shaking to try to loosen the door, and it set off their car alarm.
What kind of car do you have?
Just a car.
Okay, it's not like, you know, just wondering if you had like a Cadillac Escalade or something like that.
Nothing like that. What do I have? I forget. Some sort of Mazda. But regardless, it froze solid.
65 degrees here today.
65?
65.
Oh my God, it's like mid-20s here.
Gotta come to the East Coast, man.
No one's ever said that to me before.
Well, the East Coast bias. Sorry.
All right, let's get back into this Genesis pay-per-view here. Where were we before I was distracted? Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan against Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez for the tag team titles.
Yep, there you go.
Who's going to win?
I'll go with Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan just because, why not? The DOC and Sting and Mike Knox there, too. Because we left off with that one. I think Sting would get the win there, too, with obviously some sorts of aces and eights run-ins or interference or something like that. And I wonder if they take the mask off of somebody else.
Man, the cold and the apparent theft is throwing me completely off my game here. But I got to get back into the action. God forbid Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan win these tag team titles. I can't handle this.
Maybe Matt Morgan could shave a belt into his chest hair instead of the old Hulk Hogan, Freddie Blassie days look that he has now, the nuclear bomb or whatever it is.
What happened to his robe? Where's his Hulk Hogan robe been?
I don't know. Yeah, Matt Morgan is an incredible athlete in his size and everything.
He is? I've seen no evidence of this ever.
Well, that's
yeah, he was good at basketball. He's 8 feet tall.
I don't know. And Joey Ryan is, I thought he'd be a good pickup for them as far as just being able to sell a little bit of merchandise and to be a lower.
What merchandise? Who's buying this?
I know. All you've seen him do is, be on a rocking horse pouring oil all over himself, and didn't quite work out with sleazy T-shirts in the way that I thought it would, but hasn't exactly worked out with any of these.
In which
guys.
Way did you think it would work?
I
sleazy T-shirts all over the Impact Zone?
I didn't have high hopes, but I just figured, look, they have not been able to, outside of Jeff Hardy, really market anything anyway.
So you thought Joey Ryan?
Well, here's the thing with Joey Ryan. At least he has a built-in fan base of people that order PWG and who liked PWG, where maybe you have the just here, print up a couple of sleazy shirts and see what happens. And they didn't even do that, and so you couldn't see. Well, obviously you saw what happened. So I'm not saying it was going to be epic or anything like that. I just figured, well, there's a chance. At least it's something new, because I don't see them selling too many Wes Briscoe T-shirts.
I'm just baffled. I need to go to shoptna.com and see if they actually have any sleazy T-shirts. And then I've got some clothing and apparel. Let's see. Impact. Oh, just a normal Impact shirt.
Wrestlers. You pick up a Brooke Hogan Hardcore 5150 shirt like Bully Ray has.
Matt Morgan has a shirt. Genetic Giant. Austin Aries, obviously. Kurt Angle Cyborg shirt. Jeff Hardy Storm. Jeff Hardy. Sting. Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy barely is selling some merch.
What about AJ?
AJ's got a couple of things right here. I don't see anything from Joey Ryan. Perhaps I need to do a...
So why else would you then sign Joey Ryan, though? If you're not looking at him just being a walking like gimmick that annoys people, that maybe somebody will buy their stuff like Zack Ryder style, why did you even bring him in?
Search results. You searched for all products matching Joey Ryan. Displaying products 1 and 2 of 2, which appears to be his theme music. I'm not kidding. His theme music you can purchase for 99 cents at shoptna.com, as well as the entire EP for $4.99.
There you go, fill up your ringback tones.
Did you know, Mike, that Joe Park's entrance music is available at shoptna.com?
I did not, but you know what? If I was going to order music from someone, I would make it Joe Park because I support Joe Park, Park.
It is straight out of Law & Order. I wish I could download it and play it on this show. You know what else is available? Taryn Terrell, the former Tiffany, apparently has an entrance song, and it is also available at shoptna.com. Do you know what it's called?
I do not.
Hot Mess.
See, you've always been negative. I've always enjoyed that Hot Mess.
I haven't been negative.
Yes,
I mean, I've been
have.
A little negative.
Well,
I point out she's completely incompetent in her job, but I'm sure she's a nice girl.
As the head of ECW, she was. I think she's actually done a fine job as a referee. At least she's showing some enthusiasm in her matches.
We got so much stuff to talk about. Let's just run down this card real quick and then move on. I'm afraid no one's buying the show, and I'm actually baffled that they did such a poor job building this up, because they only have 4 live pay-per-views, and this is one of them. There's only 3 left! So we've got Doc and Sting, Kenny King and Christian York, with the winner facing Rob Van Dam, Joe Park in his new wrestling career facing D-Von, and Gail Kim, ODB, Miss Tessmacher, Mickey James, and Velvet Sky in a gauntlet match. Any thoughts on any of this, Mike, or should we move on?
We should probably move on, but I'll say this, as bizarre as this is going to sound, speaking of Taryn Terrell, the women's match may actually be the biggest surprise of anything, not of the two major matches we talked about at the beginning.
That is not impossible. They had a great match. It's funny, I've really enjoyed Impact of late, but I can't imagine anyone buying this pay-per-view. I don't know how many times I've said that. And believe me, hey, I'll admit it, I was wrong last time. I did not think that the last pay-per-view was going to do 11,000 buys, but Jeff Hardy, in the main event as champion, is money for TNA. At least, well, I can't say he's money. He sold pay-per-views. In the end, it was a money loser, but he's still money, kind of. But the point is, I don't think anyone's buying this pay-per-view. They did a bad job building it up, and all the build is for next week's show on television. Why would anyone buy this?
That has been their problem, one of their problems for
That's why
forever.
They got 4 pay-per-views now.
Well, and that's the thing, too. If you're not going to put in, you know, any emphasis on the pay-per-views, at least go out there and kill yourself to try to do anything possible to get sponsors for the show, whether you have to do an Arena Mexico style and put them up to the corners and put them on wrestlers' ring gear and stuff like that. Because if you're just, you know, doing pay-per-views to set up TV shows is just, and WWE has done this too. They've fallen in that habit of falling into the TNA trap, so they're not immune from it either. But that logic just absolutely blows my mind, because, you know, Christian York, the Kenny King thing is a good example of this. You know, this is something that's been playing out on TV, and again, now you have to pay for it. We talked about that with Claudio and R-Truth. Same way. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that you are paying $44.95 for something that you've seen a million times already, and it's all just to go ahead and set up the next free show you're going to see on TV anyway. Which, again, that's, you cannot convert any of your, why would any of those million people that watch your show, why wouldn't any more than 10,000 of them want to go ahead and order the pay-per-view then? That is something that I just will never understand.
All righty, let's talk about The Rock. He's back. Led to Raw doing a 3.1 rating. Numbers were way up. Not only were they way up, but they were way up going head-to-head with what ended up being the second most-watched cable program in the history of television, that being the BCS Championship game last Monday night. I was shocked the rating did as well as it did. I figure, well, yes, of course, the number's going to go up. The Rock's back. He's in a main event segment. Obviously, it's going to be up. But that is, I realized the game was a blowout, but the rating was still absolutely through the roof. And so, astonishing to me that he did as well as he did. You know, I know a lot of people, a lot of the hardcore fans, you know, they like The Rock and all, but I don't think they really grasp how much the average wrestling fan loves The Rock. And that was proven last Monday.
In a way, in a way, and I'm not trying to crap on it or anything like that, or bring up that the football game was over that early, but last year, Brock Lesnar, Triple H, Undertaker, Rock, Mick Foley, Chris Jericho, it was a 3-1 to a 3-3 all the time. He just bumped the number back up to a 3-1. Again, I'm not trying to discount that or anything like that, because it obviously is a big deal, and it is a move, and it's a move in the right direction now that football's ending and you're going into WrestleMania season, the whole nine yards. But I still don't think anybody should be looking at a 3-1 and really, again, be happy about it in the fact that it's, you know, good forward direction, but no one should be content with that number. No one.
Well, you'd have to be content with the number, but it did. Yes, he brought it up to the level it was at last year, but he did that at a time when the numbers are down because of the three-hour format and going head-to-head with a show that did 26.4 million viewers. So it's very impressive. We're going to head to a break. We'll talk more about this when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday for 2 hours. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, tons and tons of radio shows, more radio shows literally than you have any idea what to do with. Sometimes I do as many as 5 shows in a single day. Did a brand new Observer Radio last night with Dave Meltzer talking the Strikeforce show. Got another one tonight after the TNA pay-per-view. Got another one tomorrow night after Raw. We have guests on all the time. Some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling have appeared on the show. Wrestlers, journalists, whole nine yards. Tons and tons of shows. And if you sign up today, $10.99 every month. It's $10.99 a month. Every single show we've ever done is available in the archives right now. So if you sign up for $10.99, you can go in and download shows from 2005. You can go and download shows from 2008. You can find your favorite pay-per-view of the last 7-8 years and go listen to our review right now. It's all available in the archives. Full archives. Everything is available the moment you sign up. So essentially, for $10.99, it's like you signed up in 2005, essentially. You'll never get through it in a month, but you can try. And I've said it a million times, if you like Wrestling Observer Live, this program you're listening to right now, you will love WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check it out. We got a lot of free shows up on the front page if you scroll down the right-hand side. Give them a shot. Give a subscription a shot. Again, it's only $10.99 per month. You can sign up once and never again if you don't like it. But you can also sign up for recurring. Just have it taken out of your PayPal every single month. Never have to worry about it again. And listen to audio on the way to work, while you train, anywhere that you need something to listen to. Wrestling Observer Radio will provide audio for you. So check it out. And Mike, we're talking the return of The Rock. What did you think of his segment with CM Punk on Raw Monday?
You know, I don't. I maybe I was out of it when we got to it. I didn't. I thought SmackDown, what they did on SmackDown was actually even better than what they did on Raw. And I don't know. I don't want to get into the you know who was better sort of thing. They did a good job together. The Rock played The Rock, and Punk did a very good job, I think, playing off that. But for some reason, something was not clicking for me, even though they were both very good, especially I think CM Punk was too. You knew The Rock was going to go out there and do his shtick. And Punk playing against that, I thought, did a good job. But for some reason, it just didn't grab me. But then again, when it came to SmackDown on Friday, I thought they did a really good job. But the way, you know, Punk and Heyman, and Heyman just being, you know, slimy, and Punk, his talking at the stadium, in front of the camera, and The Rock coming out and doing what he did, which led up to Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes. I thought that was actually the high point for both of those guys this week. The Raw was good, but for some reason, and I'm probably in the big minority on this, as people are going back and forth choosing sides on who they liked on Monday, for some reason, neither one of them really grabbed me and sucked me in for some reason.
I thought the SmackDown deal with The Rock, Sandow, and Cody Rhodes was awesome. I don't care. I know that people are going to say, oh, he went out and he buried two young guys and this and that. But listen, I was entertained the entire time. It was a showcase for Sandow and Rhodes. They took one move each. It's not like they had a tag match and he single-handedly beat both of them. He laid them out. They'll be fine. I thought it was a great showcase. Sandow going toe-to-toe with The Rock verbally. Same with Cody Rhodes. You know, they sometimes you see a guy who makes people look like geeks. This was, they are two geeks. That's their role. And they shined, I felt, in this segment with Rock. And I thought it was, I was greatly entertained by it. When it was over, it wasn't like I thought any less of the two guys. I actually wanted to see more of them. I just thought the segment was fun. It was entertaining. It wasn't nearly as stupid as a lot of the stuff you've seen in WWE with Rock and some of the stuff that's written for him. I just thought it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed that segment.
Yeah, same here, too. And anybody that wants to complain about that, I think, is being way too oversensitive. You know, I'm not saying Cody Rhodes is unthinkable or anything like that, but, no matter what he does, people want to see him. And, they should probably do a lot more with Cody Rhodes, and maybe after this they do. But as far as Sandow goes, I mean, that was still, you know, The Rock didn't go out there and embarrass him like he was Kevin Kelly or something like that, or he's done, you know, or he's got the ability to do, and he's done with other guys in the past. I mean, I want to say gave Sandow a rub or anything like that. That's not my terminology to use, but he did, you know, and he didn't make him look like a fool, and they played their parts, you know, perfectly. And Sandow, as he's gotten even more and more comfortable in his role of being Damian Sandow, is fantastic.
Also on SmackDown, Alberto Del Rio is the new World Heavyweight Champion. Kind of a, I don't want to say it was a last-minute decision, but they have decided, we need a Hispanic superstar. If you watched the show at the beginning when Big Show mentioned there are no more Latino superstars, that was kind of a dig on WWE's part on Rey and Sin Cara, who have failed in that role for various reasons. And the decision was made that Alberto's going to be our guy. This was the plan from day one when he was brought in, that he would ultimately play this role. They had him go heel first, talk about his destiny, that sort of thing. They completely botched his babyface turn. And I think they realized, well, screw this up. We need to fix it. We need to remedy it. And let's do it now. Let's not wait. Let's not waste time. If we do it at the Rumble, the next day, all people will be talking about is what happened in the CM Punk versus The Rock match and who won the Rumble. Nobody's going to be talking about Alberto Del Rio. We can do it here. We can get the word out on the internet. We can get people tuning in to SmackDown. We'll have The Rock on SmackDown. We'll condition the people to knowing that Rock is going to be on both shows, which will help viewership. And it'll be a bigger deal on Friday than it will be at the Royal Rumble. And so, bam, he's your champion. He is a top guy. He is going to be your Latino superstar hero. And the match, I thought, was very good.
Yeah, I thought it was, too. I think they really limped into this, though, with the way they turned Del Rio. And obviously, they were doing things at the last minute as far as coming up with plans. And what a weird 2 years it's been for Alberto Del Rio, because bringing him in as a heel and all those times, he was supposed to win the title, and how, again, that they just, for whatever reason, kind of lost the plot with him. They did a good job. Again, I wish that it would have had more impact with the way the whole thing had been built up. I mean, the Santa Claus thing, how the Rodriguez-Big Show match was just, the ending just didn't, you know, come out exactly in the way that it should have to lead up to this. But now that it's happened, you know, I don't know if this is going to be a deal where you needed a buffer to get to Dolph Ziggler or anything like that, because I still think that's the case, and I hope before that happens they continue to really kind of drive home Alberto, not as a goofy, let me help my hermano Ricardo Rodriguez sort of goofy baby face, which I have a fear that they're going to try to make him do. You know, I would still just kind of ease into it. with him still being somewhat of a badass. I mean, that's the one thing they haven't really played up a whole lot. JBL mentioned is, you know, the fictitious Pan American gold medal that he won, but, you know, he is a relatively legitimate tough guy. So hopefully they can move in that direction with him where it's not cornball, cartoony, goofy Latino superstar. It's somebody with a little bit of teeth to him because, again, outside of Randy Orton, who is always on the edge of having an issue, and John Cena, there's really nobody else. So they do need somebody, and Alberto Del Rio as a cartoon or as a weak champion isn't going to be that guy.
Who wins at the Rumble?
Who wins the Rumble?
Who wins at the Rumble? You could say the Rock Punk match and the Royal Rumble winner.
It's hard for me not to think it's going to be Rock and Cena. I know how obvious that sounds, and I would love to see a swerve in there. It wouldn't hurt my feelings at all to see a swerve in there. But I'll go with those two, you know, those two as the winners.
Now, the Punk DVD, have you had a chance to check that out yet?
No, I haven't yet. You know, I'm actually watching Nigel's right now, but the Punk one's going to come after this.
What do you think of Nigel's DVD?
You know, it's always... It's interesting.
Have you watched the entire thing, or how far into it are you?
I'm up to, this is just, oh God, it was him talking to his mother. You know, it's getting up there pretty quick. He's already kind of talked about what happened with WWE and the whole nine yards there, and you know, but it's just amazing. I didn't know he was working at a grocery store and things like that, but, you know, it's wrestling's just one of those things. Everybody always wants to follow their dreams in any business. Or anything in life, no matter how old you get, there's always that thing that will probably give you a little bit regret that you wish you could have went after. And it's always funny in professional wrestling when you hear guys talk and you see their situation because you grow up having this image of what these guys are and who you think they are. But in reality, and in, you know, like Nigel's DVD proves, you have to ask yourself at what point do you stop chasing that dragon and stop chasing that dream? And it's just one of those things that humanizes pro wrestling and humanizes guys. And, you know, Nigel's an easy guy to get behind anyway. So I just, again, it's one of those interesting stories, and I'm glad he's been able to document it. I'm glad the thing got made because I think it's really good and has shown a good light for me for pretty much everybody involved.
I never got a chance to ask him when we interviewed, but I often wonder why he didn't get a TNA job and save up his money and get bicep surgery and try WWE again.
That's a good question. That is an absolutely good question. You know, and it's too bad to have that TNA run went to because it was a reminder when, you know, you think about him, he had the hot valet and, you know, he was hooked up with Flair and they had that little... You know, the group that they had, it's too bad because he really did stand out well, and it was amazing to see the bottom drop out for him that fast. As other guys in his, you know, group, like, you know, Daniel Bryan, his generational rivals and ROH counterparts, were on the rise.
Speaking of Flair, by the way, tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of Raw Spectacular, and Ric Flair may or may not be there. I think he's going to be there. I think he's going to be there to do something with CM Punk, although they have made some changes over the past week to what was originally planned. So I guess we'll see what happens. But he's going to be there. Mick Foley is going to be announced as going into the WWE Hall of Fame over Mania weekend in New York at Madison Square Garden this year. And what are your thoughts on Foley, the first inductee into the Hall of Fame this year?
Well, that's how it should be. I mean, really, that's an absolute no-brainer. And I guess we may have, you know, let the cat out of the bag for some people. But, yeah, it shouldn't have been a surprise anyway. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Mick Foley, the Long Island boy, who went, you know, was so influenced by seeing Jimmy Snuka in Magnificent Morocco in the Garden, went to all those shows there. It is just the perfect thing. And, you know, the thought of... That match from a few years ago where it was, the Orton, Flair, and Batista against The Rock and Mick Foley in Madison Square Garden on the, I think it was whatever it was, WrestleMania 25 or whatever it was, you know, that was really cool. And the reaction he's going to get inside there is going to be pretty amazing. And I'd love to hear his speech.
Well, it has been announced on WWE.com, so I don't take any credit for spoiling anything. All right, when we come back from the break, we're going to wrap it up. We got a couple of minutes left, so stick around for those. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And as we wrap up this show today, we've been talking a lot of different topics, including the TNA Genesis pay-per-view tonight, the return of The Rock, Alberto Del Rio winning the World Heavyweight Championship, and Mick Foley going into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. And Mike, you've got about a minute here. I shall put you on the spot. Yes or no, is Bruno Sammartino going into the Hall of Fame for WWE this year?
No. I would love to say yes. I really would. In a way, I really would. But I just, Bruno, there's just, you can always respect a guy of principle, and you could say maybe they're too stubborn or hard-headed or anything like that. You know what? Unless it's absolutely perfect for Bruno to go in, and I don't know what it would take to do that, I hope he doesn't do it. You know, I hope he sticks to his guns. You know, he's always been consistent in everything he's said and how he's felt. And, you know, in a way, I'd love to see that everything kind of thaw and for him to come back into the fold. But God knows if that happens before, you know, Vince McMahon dies or he dies. And the way they're both going, I don't think either one of them will ever die. In fact, Bruno Sammartino at 150 years old will still be benching 400 pounds.
Then it probably will go into the WWE Hall of Fame.
That's, you know, again, and I don't know where it stands. Superstar Billy Graham and a lot of other people got way too excited with his comments about CM Punk's one-liner about, you know, I've been champions for, you know, God knows 400 days or whatever it is, and Bruno only worked one night a week at Madison Square Garden or one night a month at Madison Square Garden. I think people got way too into that when it came to, was that a dig at Bruno for saying no to Triple H or for spurning the WWE's advances? I just think it was a dude getting heat by using the name Bruno Sammartino, who he's actually brought up before, and he and Paul Heyman have both brought up. So I don't think it's that big of a deal.
We're out of time, everybody. I want to thank y'all for listening. Don't forget the Genesis pay-per-view tonight and the 20th anniversary of Raw tomorrow. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Check out WrestlingObserver.com for daily audio. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network.